So, good afternoon. This afternoon, as a preface to the relational practice which Jill will take up with us, I wanted to speak a little more about sila, wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood. And in her wonderful talk last night, Jill made a link between these and the precepts that we took up at the beginning of this retreat: not killing, not taking that which is not clearly given, not using not engaging in sexual misconduct, not using harmful speech, and not intoxicating body and mind. And she said that one aspect of wise intention was an intention towards harmlessness, and how our compassion practice here on this retreat is an example of us choosing to contribute to harmlessness. And that when we orient to compassion, wise speech, wise action, and wise livelihood are the result. So, as we come towards the end of our retreat, we can widen these precepts out to bring in a larger spectrum of our lives, to expand beyond our individual lives and to include greater and greater numbers of beings. To bring the larger picture of humanity into our practice. And our world needs this now so desperately. There's a connection between what is needed in ourselves and what is needed in the world. So, the first two precepts of honoring all life and not taking that which is not ours are both really relevant to how we interact with our planet and all the creatures upon it. Some of you may know that the International Panel on Climate Change, which is a body of thousands of scientists across the world, and is regarded to be rather conservative in their estimates, has told us that we have a remaining carbon budget of carbon dioxide that we can release into the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels and from other sources. A carbon budget of just 5 tons of CO2 per person for the next 8 years, to have a 67% chance of staying under 1.5 degrees. I worked it out. I worked out what the remaining carbon budget is, and I assumed there were 8 billion people on the planet. And it worked out at 5 tons each per year for 8 years, and then it's finished. We can't afford to burn any more carbon if we're going to stay under 1.5 degrees. So that's a rather shocking fact that our scientists are telling us. And there's many, many scientists who are really struggling with their mental health as a result of the world not listening to this, or not seeming to listen, not seeming to be able to take this in. And that's what we have if we're going to avoid a hothouse earth with very little or no ice, which is where much of our fresh water supplies come from. Fires, floods, drought, sea level rise, consequent mass migration, food shortages, and potentially even social collapse. And we can see that some of this is already here. Fires, floods, drought. So I looked up what the average Kiwi uses, what the average Kiwi's carbon footprint is, and it's 16 tonnes per year. And we're fortunate in that most of our energy comes from hydroelectricity. So Australians' average annual energy greenhouse gas emissions was slightly higher than that. So when we consider the precepts, we can ask, am I taking more than my fair share of the carbon budget? What can I do? What can I do to reduce my carbon footprint? And it's not easy. It's not easy to live in this world, in this society, and reduce that. But could I perhaps get to the shops by bus or bike or by foot rather than by car? Or could I perhaps eat less dairy or meat? Or could I check out my carbon footprint using a carbon calculator? There's lots of them online. And just see where my carbon footprint's coming from. What can I do to encourage a move away from this fossil fuel economy? You know, am I depositing my money with banks that fund fossil fuel extraction? In New Zealand and Australia, folks, the bad news is we pretty much are. Kiwi Bank has just become the first New Zealand bank to divest fully from fossil fuel funding and to have a policy and a clear commitment to not doing so in the future. And that's come after a long campaign, which I've been involved in. Or are we consuming goods that require burning of fossil fuels in their manufacture, and then certainly in their transport around the world? How much do I really need? I don't know about you, but the lockdown really highlighted for me what was a need and what was a want. Or could I support my government to take action on offering sustainable transport options? For myself, I do quite a bit of lobbying of local government and central government, actually, in these areas. And certainly I find that at local government level, it's really worth doing. Sometimes I get listened to. Two councils last year, the local city council and regional council here in Christchurch, declared a climate emergency because I asked them to. And with the city council, I worked with them to develop a really solid, substantial set of clauses that went with it, that elaborated what that meant. And they haven't kept to it. So now I'm regularly visiting council and reminding them that they agreed to make climate and water their overarching priorities in every decision they made. And how does that fit with building a new car park? And before I went there and did that, I'd never submitted to council in my life. It was completely new for me. I didn't know I could do that. And it was pretty exciting, actually. It's brought me alive to step out of my comfort zone a little bit. Another thing we can look at is if I derive my income, so wise livelihood, if I derive my income from a company which is doing harm in the world, then what to do? Can I influence that somehow from inside? Or do I perhaps need to reconsider my work if I possibly can? I began my working career in the dairy industry. And it wasn't very long before the practice of getting a cow and calf every year and then disposing of the bobby calves that were born as a result, just to give a 3 month boost in milk production, did not sit well with me. And not only that, but the whole tinkering with food, processing the food, turning it into something else, adding things to it, not particularly healthy things. And I left. And I was fortunate to have that choice. So another aspect of not taking that which is not truly given to me is noticing, do I consume goods that contribute to the destruction of habitat for some animal species? So you probably know also about palm oil and the destruction of the Indonesian rainforest to grow great big palm monocultures. Palm oil has made orangutans an endangered species. One of our closest cousins. Something that really gets me is the way that greenhouse gas emissions and the increasing CO2, concentration in the atmosphere is melting the sea ice. By the end of summer 2025, it's predicted there will be no more Arctic sea ice. That means no polar bear habitat. Polar bears can't efficiently gather enough food on land. Or if we support fast food chains, we're supporting the destruction of the Amazon, one of the biggest lungs of the earth. Or are we supporting overfishing of endangered fish species? Are we aware of these things? And not just the animals, but here in the Pacific, our cousins who live on the Pacific atolls are also threatened. We're in the middle of an ecological emergency, a mass extinction, the sixth mass extinction. Those of you in Australia, the heartbreaking fish death in the Murray-Darling River. Thousands and thousands of fish. Or the one third of the endangered bat species that died in a heat wave a couple of years ago. They just all dropped out of the trees. In the fires last year, 5 million animals, I heard. Bigger fires than, orders of magnitude bigger than have ever happened before. Here in New Zealand, we've had similar things. Thousands of dead, tens of thousands of dead pipi washing up on a beach. Overall, on our planet, 76% of our insect biomass has been lost. Those are our pollinators, mostly. So those are just two examples of some of the many enormous issues which are happening in our world today. There's also the post-truth world of fake news and lies, conspiracy theory, or the Me Too movement, sexual misconduct towards women, how common that is. Or Black Lives Matter, discrimination against people of colour. Here in New Zealand, we certainly have had an impact. There's been an impact of colonialism on Māori, our Indigenous culture. We don't learn about that in our schools. I learned about it when I joined a government department. And when I actually read the history, I wept. And recently, the Department of Corrections was taken to the Waitangi Tribunal for failing Māori. They make up 55% of our prison population, but only 15% of our population. And as a result, finally, yay, the department has actually had to do more than pay lip service to this issue. Very heartening. And I want to acknowledge that these things are really hard to hear, really hard to take in. They can seem so enormous and so overwhelming. And one response we can find ourselves in with that involves the fifth precept of not intoxicating mind and body, where we distract ourselves from really seeing this. We turn away. We watch TV or read novels or do retail therapy or use alcohol or just ignore it. I know I did, hoping that it would sort itself out or that it wasn't really true or that someone else would sort it out for me. So can we be willing to really turn and face these bigger aspects of dukkha and to open our hearts to this immense suffering? Because we can't afford to look away anymore and ignore this. It's not going away. The time when it wasn't so obvious what effect we're having is long gone. And maybe we can see that not only does the practice of integrity bring joy, gladdening of the heart, but our very survival as a species may depend on it. So we can take time to contemplate our life on this beautiful earth and the impact that our actions may have. Before every action, when we bring mindfulness to it, we can ask, what impact will this action have? And if we're not sure, be interested, educate ourselves and find out. And it's not easy. It's often very complex. And we seem to have to weigh up one damage against another. It's a difficult choice. So if we think of this as widening our compassion practice, turning towards the suffering, and we can notice if we're moved by any issue or situation and ask ourselves, what can I do in a small way to express my caring for a situation that really touches us, is alive for us, whatever situation that is. And if we feel outrage over what's happening, which is natural and normal, see if we can go underneath those feelings to contact the place of real caring for those who are the victims. Underneath anger, we find love. For something or of something. Forests, creatures, humanity, those who are oppressed. Staying in touch with our caring heart. I love what the poet and teacher Andrew Harvey says. He asks us, follow your heartbreak. And there's no one right action to take, so it's just seeing what we're moved to do. There's a saying, action absorbs anxiety. Because we can notice the very big fear that comes up about some of these issues for us. So we can notice that the sense of agency and empowerment that comes from just doing something. Particularly connecting with others to do something can be a real support. There's many groups acting for change out there. So we may not achieve our end. But what comes in my experience is creativity, joy, and connection just from taking some action. So I'd like to just close before I hand over to Jill by sharing with you a set of eco-sattva vows that have been put together. They came from work by Joanna Macy, who those of you in Australia in particular may be quite familiar with. I think she spent quite a lot of time there. And they're quite beautiful vows. Confirming our commitment to health, vitality, and ease for all beings, seen and unseen, near and far, born and yet to be born. Based on my love of the world and understanding of deep interdependence of all things, I vow to live on earth more lightly and less violently in the food, products, and energy I consume. To commit myself daily to the healing of the world and the welfare of all beings, to discern and replace human systems of oppression and harm, to invite personal discomfort as an opportunity to share in the challenge of our collective liberation, to draw strength and guidance from the living earth and our ancestors and future generations, and from our beautiful sisters and brothers of all species. To offer help to others in their work for the world, and to ask for help when I feel the need. To pursue a daily spiritual practice that clarifies my mind, strengthens my heart, and supports me in observing these urgent and joyful vows. Thank you. And I'll hand over to Jill.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.